Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Monday afternoon version. Another beautiful day here in the Allstate Showcase studio along Michigan Avenue. Scott Kleinberg will be along a little bit later. He likes to join us to talk about new things in social media. And we'll talk business of sports a little bit later in the program. But Mondays, we usually start with the Inno boys, the boys from Chicago Inno. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, so one of the things Kleinberg is going to talk about is, and I mentioned this before the news, but there's a guy in China who's opened up a Chinese restaurant. It's on a plane. He bought a plane, refurbished the plane. So apparently you take your order and then you take off. They take off up in the air, fly around, you eat, and then it lands.
And what's this? Why? What's the? Is it like, you know?
It's just something different, I think. Yeah. You know, and your girlfriend can't storm out of the restaurant either halfway through dinner.
It's the best airline food I think you'll probably ever eat. Yeah.
Well, with any luck, anyway. Okay, you guys aren't here to talk about that. Tell me about Magic Leap. Now, Jim, you wrote a piece on Chicago Inno, and it's featured predominantly today about this Magic Leap out of Florida. I'd never heard anything about it.
Yeah, if you haven't heard of Magic Leap, you will hear about it very soon. They are a very secretive startup operating out of Florida, and they are working on mixed reality, which is different from virtual reality. Virtual reality kind of keeps you within a headset, sort of tethered to a computer and sort of living within the screen that it's showing you.
Okay.
Mixed reality overlays the content and images via glass into your real world.
So have I heard that called enhanced reality too?
Augmented reality. These terms are kind of used a little interchangeably, sure. but what they're doing is mixed reality, and basically you can imagine playing a first-person shooter game, and the monster that you're shooting is dodging your living room couch and working its way into the kitchen to try to find you. That's the kind of potential that mixed reality has, and that's what Magic Leap is doing.
So they're bringing characters into your living room.
Characters into the living room. You can also think about, you know, doing basic computing, checking your email as if it was like a floating inbox directly above your head, scrolling through the emails you need to read. So there's a lot of possibilities with mixed reality, and Magic Leap, a $1.4 billion funded startup operating out of Florida. They've got the Google CEO on their board. They're working with Disney, Peter Jackson, a lot of big names. People who've seen this technology are really excited about it, and there's a really fascinating Motorola connection.
Yeah, so I want to get to that, but what's the use of this going to be for me? Just to run around and play games, or is it like Google Glass? Or
it is like Google Glass, and that's where augmented reality people are really more excited about than VR. Because again, virtual reality, you're locked in,
you're escaping somewhere.
And virtual reality is an entertainment device. Where augmented reality, it seamlessly brings the digital into the real world. So if you think about how we interact with our mobile phones or your desktop or really anything, it does this in a more natural way. It's kind of you think about like our relationship with our smartphones, this is kind of that next medium, more so than VR.
Think about walking down the street and being able to see the Yelp reviews of every restaurant you walk by just through the lens in your headset.
Now, is that not what Google Glass tried to do?
So Google Glass was probably a little ahead of its time, yeah. And I think the biggest application for Google Glass will still be within the enterprise. I think on the manufacturing floor, you're still seeing it. I mean, I think there's still a lot of applications for Google Glass. I don't think consumer-wise, people were quite ready for that yet.
Yeah, it's a brand new way to engage with the digital world.
And so the big money behind it, big names and great talent behind it. When will we see it? Is it something we'll see?
So this is a product that has been very secretive, and they have not released a timeline, at least publicly, for when they're going to release a product. They said just the other month that it's coming very soon, quote unquote, but we don't really know what exactly that means. It could be this fall.
This
it could
fall,
be next
yeah,
year. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, and so then you mentioned earlier the local angle. There are a lot of employees from Motorola who are behind this Magic Leap.
Yes, that's the really fascinating part about this story for our, you know, kind of Chicago audience, is that Motorola has actually played a big presence in Magic Leap. Motorola closed its Plantation, Florida plant, which is just outside of Fort Lauderdale, in August of 2015. So big plant where Motorola Mobility was working, laid off 200 people. In August of that, or in October of that year, Magic Leap, looking for a new headquarters, moved in. So they have made that former Motorola building their headquarters.
Makes sense. They needed a facility. They've got a facility.
Exactly. And then there are 200 laid off hardware and software experts at Motorola, and Magic Leap has hired at least 83 of those people. So there are more Motorolans working at Magic Leap than any other tech company.
Is that, so it's almost like Magic Leap bought the hardware and the software. They bought the building and they bought the brains.
Yeah, I mean, and you're talking about a town in South Florida. This isn't Silicon Valley where it's a town full of people familiar with building tech hardware, right? So, I mean, these are people who've been at Motorola, many people who've been there for a dozen plus years, very familiar with making tech products, and now Motorola is there to scoop not up only the facility, but the talent.
Yeah, and that's what we do see, right? Like, we're excited about, we're Chicago Inno, not the world Inno. And so when we read about Magic Leap and the fact that, yes, this could be the next big thing in technology, it's exciting that there is some Chicago DNA there, though it's kind of separate because it was a Florida facility. But again, you know, Chicago has influenced what's being built magically.
Tell me about this M1 Finance, which is a new fintech company coming.
Yeah,
up
really cool company. It's fintech, so it's an investment platform. In the big picture thing with M1 Finance, they want to make investing as easy as setting up a savings account. The pitch is everyone's money has potential. People are realizing it in a different way. If you just create a savings account, you're making X amount in return. It's as easy as this, but you're getting more. So it's for the engaged investor, but it's also for the new investor. What I love about this story is that it was founded by a Stanford grad who is out in Silicon Valley. He had this idea of
Naperville
a business.
Naperville boy, right?
Naperville guy, and he wanted to build it in Chicago, not just because it's home, but because he looked at Chicago and he looked at the type of businesses that were being built here. These sustainable, pragmatic, they weren't thinking themselves as startups, they were thinking themselves as businesses. And he was kind of turned off by the Silicon Valley noise around disruption and we got to break things.
I read it like the look at us sort of mentality out there.
Yeah, when it's also just like, hey, bro, let's change the world and we don't know what that means yet. Like, he knows what it means. He knows what his product is. He wants to make an easy-to-use investment platform, and he saw Chicago as a place that kind of thinks about building in that way, which is care about your product, care about your customers, go and make a Fortune 100, 500 business.
That's Will Flanagan, the general manager of Chicago Inno. Jim Dahlke is here as well. You know, a lot of people are in fantasy football leagues. Football season started this weekend. But these guys, they do like an ecosystem fantasy draft, which it's going to take the whole next segment for me to understand. It's 12:24. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Monday afternoon on 720 WGN. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are in the studio from Chicago Inno. Okay, let's do this. I'll just read the headline. Chicago Tech Ecosystem Fantasy Draft.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the key thing about this, Steve. Don't overthink it.
There's
no kind of infrastructure or point system. Basically, this is like everyone else on Friday. We were in a football mood. We were excited for the kickoff of the NFL season. And we were talking, you know, how can we bring that into our daily newsletter? And we thought, let's do a fantasy draft. Everybody, whether it's a person, an organization, a company, a trend, anything that makes up the ecosystem, let's go back and forth. I pick one, you pick one, I pick one, you pick one. And let's quickly form our fantasy team. And reason behind this is it's just a great way to kind of shout out people who are driving the innovation economy forward without having to package it in an award or anything.
And
it's just,
you're having your teams get together for a flag football team on Thanksgiving?
We should, yeah. I mean, we have kind of like, we have facilities and organizations that we pick, so it would be hard to kind of personify Blue 1647, but we can make it happen.
I would love to see J.B. Pritzker and Chris Gladwin going head-to-head.
Yes, that would be
a
fun
match.
But yeah, my first pick was Chris Gladwin. Founder, former CEO of CleverSafe, company that sold for over $1 billion, and now he's building again. And he's not my first pick because, oh, his company sold for big money, but he gave a ton back to IIT. He has a really sound way of thinking about the ecosystem. You make, you give back, and you kind of incentivize and inspire people to do the same. So he's just kind of...
And his company created 80 millionaires.
Amanda
Lannert wasn't your first pick?
She was one of my top picks. She's a great CEO for Jellyvision. She's won every top CEO award. So, yeah, it was a fun way for Jim and I to go back and forth. Jim, who's on your team?
Yeah, on my team, I had a Nicole Yeary's Miss Tech organization doing some really, really cool stuff for really recognizing and providing resources for women in tech in Chicago. And the next one, Pritzker, like I mentioned, JB's group. They're a very active venture group here in Chicago. And again, this is just kind of a fun thing that we got to do on our Beat newsletter that you can check out at chicagono.com and subscribe for.
Yeah, check out the newsletter. It's a lot of fun. And I know exactly what you did. You did this sort of draft after you wrote and maybe imbibed in the story about the Jim Beam Apple Watch, right?
Yeah, come on. That's funny, right? Like, everyone last week is talking about Apple's big product event, and it's just such a snooze. It's the same thing every year.
No, dude, there's a new camera,
oh,
man.
Look at this. Yeah, it's we bring VR. But so Jim Beam kind of released a kind of goofy little kind of parody campaign where it was the Jim Beam Apple Watch, and it's a watch that has a collapsible shot glass built into it, and the video treats it very kind of techie and seriously, and it's funny. It's a funny campaign.
And it's the Jim Beam Apple watch.
Yeah. They definitely skirted
the trademark concerns. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. And but apparently very popular because the website says it's sold out.
That's right. Who knows? They could have made three. I don't know how many they actually made, but whoever's got one, you're a lucky guy.
Yeah, it was a good move. I mean, those Apple product reveals, they're ripe for parody, and it was cool to see Jim Beam jump in on it.
Good for the Beam Suntory, right? That's the company just headquartered in Deerfield. So, all right, boys, Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan, nice to see you again. Hope to see you again next week.
Yes, see you Monday, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1236 on this Monday afternoon. And my friend Scott Kleinberg is on a phone line to talk a little social media. Scott Kleinberg, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you so much, Steve.
It's great to talk to you. You know, there's a number, I've been talking to different people about this. I want to call it a Chinese restaurant, but this restaurant in China. But let's get to that in a minute. Let's start with Google and this program to identify maybe ISIS recruits and dissuade them. I'm not sure I understand all that. Sort that out for me.
This is really, really smart. So this is basically Google being proactive and saying, if somebody is searching online to find out information about joining ISIS, what can they do to make sure that this person maybe doesn't make that decision? So what they're doing is they're using this program and they're going to use an algorithm to say, this is what you're searching for. Let me show you videos and information that we have that dissuades that information, that goes against that information. So it's an attempt to give them the correct information when they may be not getting, when they're not getting the correct information to start with, and hopefully changing their mind while they're still online before they actually are recruited.
Okay, so if it's me and I'm making this search and the algorithm comes up that, you know, I'm going somewhere where I might be susceptible to recruitment, am I going to see what I searched for and then also see the Google stuff, or is Google going to override my search?
According to what this says, Google's going to override your search and it's going to show you what it thinks is the opposite or what the correct version is. So you shouldn't be able to see your search in that way. It's supposed to serve up ads, supposed to serve up the information. So it's supposed to block you from that information. And a lot of it's going to have to obviously do with where they're serving this up. I mean, obviously the United States would be one place, and I'm sure they'll go doing this around the world, but it'll, I'm sure, act differently depending on where you are.
Yeah. And so is this the sort of thing, can they get in trouble for this, or no one's going to fight this, right? But if you know if you're using Google to search something, you expect to see what you searched for. I guess they have
I'm
not sure what my question is, Scott. I just don't know I don't know.
Actually, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think it makes sense that I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense that you should see what you're supposed to see. However, I think that these are different times, and I think desperate times, desperate measures. And I think in this case, I can't imagine there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be complaining about this. And if there are, I think this is one of those things that's just better for the greater good.
Is it up and running now, or is it something that they're hoping to develop still?
it's something that they're working on now, so they haven't said whether or not it's actually up or not. And I'm sure there's a lot of things that they probably would want to keep quiet about it to let, rather than letting people know. But it sounds like it's in the final stages to the point where it's ready to deploy.
All right. Speaking of working on now, you know, I was going to buy an Apple car, but then I found out they took out the headphone jacks. And I want nothing to do with that.
Well, you shouldn't drive with headphones in anyway. So maybe that helps a little.
So what's up with the Apple car?
So basically, this is the project that everybody thinks they know everything about, but nobody knows anything about. And that's typical of a lot of stuff that has to do with Apple. But this has been one of those extreme examples where someone is really trying to find out stuff that they can't find. And what the New York Times has uncovered is that the team of people working on the Apple car has been, I guess, downshifted, for lack of a better term. They're getting rid of people, but
you know what?
Still
wait,
working
wait.
On the car.
We'll wait for you to come up with a better term. No bad puns like that. Go ahead.
But so basically, they're finding out that there are fewer people working on the car, which indicates that something is happening. However, there's a separate report that says that Apple already has successful cars driving themselves around a track in some undisclosed location.
Well, both could be true, right? Both could be true. If they've gotten what they need out of those workers, they could let them go and continue development.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that's crazy. Everybody sees every little thing that and this happens in everything that has to do with Apple. Every little thing that happens, everybody assumes is a huge thing that may not be a huge thing. I think the one thing that we know for sure about the Apple car is the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, he has not been shy about hinting towards it, but he hasn't said anything in typical Apple fashion. So I think it's safe to say that this car is somewhere under development in some fashion, and it's probably going to be a pretty good while before you have to actually worry about what color you choose or that sort of thing.
You know, I was reading a story today about Aon, an executive at Aon, saying that the self-driving cars will reduce insurance rates by 40%. Which is remarkable.
Oh,
yeah, the second sentence said by the year 2050. So that's not going to do me much good.
And I actually saw a presentation at the Chicago Auto Show a couple of months ago that said that everybody who's telling you that these things are 5-10 years away, by the time we get to regulations and all those things, it's probably more like 20-30 years away. So that makes perfect sense.
Oh, well, that's interesting too, because they're driving on Pittsburgh, right? Aren't they? Isn't Uber working
sort of
an experimental
Uber's
way in Pittsburgh?
That.
I think so.
Uber's doing that in Pittsburgh, and that's the craziest thing. I used to live there, and getting a taxi in Pittsburgh is a very difficult thing to do. You can't just like flag down a taxi. You have to call for it. So the thought of having an Uber actually available is a great thing, but an Uber showing up without a person behind the wheel, I'm not sure if I'm ready for that.
All right, tell me about this restaurant in China where a fella's purchased a jet and equipped it out with a kitchen and all that. What's going on there?
Yep, it's basically China's very first airplane restaurant. So you don't go anywhere, the airplane doesn't fly, but it's an airplane-themed restaurant.
Oh.
So he spent $5.2 million to take this Boeing 737 aircraft and turn it into a gourmet restaurant that's inside a plane, complete with a wait staff that's dressed up in uniforms that have to do with the airline industry. It's basically for someone who loves to fly but doesn't want to actually go anywhere.
That is so disappointing to me. I've been telling everyone that you fly. I thought you took off and ate your meal and then landed again.
No, no. However,
so this is like a this is just like one of those choo-choo restaurants or something, except it's a plane.
Yes, it seems that way. And hopefully they tell you that when you go in and they don't think that you're actually going to fly, because that would really disappoint people.
Right.
But I like your idea better, you know, fly to Paris, have dinner, come back. That's great.
I mean, I just think China, they do things big. I think the guy should take off.
I think he should too. I mean, maybe he'll do that for the second round.
I'm trying to be sarcastic here, and I just can't come up with a good sarcastic line, which is good because that'll keep me alive in North Korea.
Yes, that is very true. Where it is now illegal to be sarcastic because Kim Jong Un has said that he's afraid of sarcasm. So what else do you do? You ban it.
Well, I like it because they're saying that he's starting to realize that when people agree with them, they're probably being sarcastic.
Yes, exactly. And apparently, from what I understand, they had these people, they always have these news readers who go on the air and they tell people what they're supposed to know. And apparently they said, be very careful what you say, because if you're overheard being sarcastic, it could be the last thing that you say.
Wow.
So I mean, if it seems like you just want to walk around, not say a thing, keep to yourself and just go about your day, and that'll be the best thing you can do.
So that's what's going on in North Korea. And there's no way to segue from that. And I should have gone with the Chinese restaurant to Cheetos flavored chicken fingers.
You can try, but yeah, it's a little bit difficult. But yeah, chicken fries, that's like Burger King's greatest invention, or so they think. It's like chicken strips, and it comes in a thing that looks like French fries.
Okay.
And now they're coating them with Cheetos. So they're Cheetos chicken fries. And why this is important, it doesn't sound like it, but why this is important is because chicken fries is a huge phenomenon on social media. Everyone loves hashtag chicken fries.
Is that sarcasm? I mean,
No, that's actually true. It's hard to believe, but it's actually true.
No, but I mean, is it part of the reason that people love it so much is because they're kind of being sarcastic or poking fun at it, or it's a genuine affection?
No, it is a genuine affection. One thing that Burger King is incredibly good at is engaging consumers. Just like Taco Bell is really good at it, Burger King is really good at that too. And they get people just to sit on the edge of their seats and wait. Over the weekend, they were like, we're going to bring up this great new thing. You have to come back Monday to find out. And all these people are tweeting all weekend, what could it be? What could it be? They're actually that excited about it. So when it comes out, Burger King doesn't even have to do any work. They just leave it up to the fans, and the fans spread it. And now it's trending on Twitter. It's almost automatic.
They waited all weekend to find out there are going to be Cheeto-flavored chicken fries at Burger King.
And they're not available until Wednesday. So now you have all these people planning what they're going to do, you know, to wait until Wednesday until they can get their Cheetos chicken fries.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all that time. Oop, I just got shot in North Korea.
You're going to have to tell me how the chicken fries are, because I know you'll be trying them.
Scott Kleinberg, great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you too, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Mandy Antonacci is on a phone line. She's a sports biz analyst and a columnist for Inc. magazine and a guest on the Business Lunch. Mandy, welcome back.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
You know, it's funny. I was at friend's house for dinner on Friday night, and we were talking about this, about different kids who are high school athletes in town or who want to be college athletes, and how you sign up for, you know, this website or that website to get noticed. And I know there have been a lot of families who spend a lot of money on training. And then I find out we're talking today about that very thing, about the amount of money that parents spend. Sometimes they spend more on their athletic training for kids than they do saving college for their kids.
Well, you know, Steve, I don't know if we should chalk this off to an Olympic residual effect or if this is something that we need to stay on top of. But a recent poll that was commissioned by TD Ameritrade surveyed a little over 1,000 parents of elite athletes. And what they found is the majority of parents are investing anywhere between $100 to $500 a month, and even one in five, $1,000 a month. And exactly what you said, they're also admitting to choosing to do so over college tuition and retirement.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because they always say, well, this is hard. The advice always is to pay yourself first when it comes to retirement, even sometimes ahead of saving for college. I don't know. It's tough for parents to do that. But when the kids are younger and you see your neighbor kids going to this sports camp or getting that athletic trainer, it becomes this sort of competitive thing.
You know, it really does. And I akin it, I know it's a difficult thing, but I akin it more to even emotional investing, right? So where we suppress any type of conventional reality and caution, and we basically conform to the emotional pressures and forge ahead without any warning. But I think when it comes to, you know, kids' sports, is striking that cautious balance, right? So what was really interesting about this survey is that the dream versus the reality, there was a huge discrepancy of parents who actually believed their kids were going to get athletic scholarships and become Olympians versus those who actually do. And the difference was 67% versus actual 24. And when we're looking at those who actually went to the Olympics or went pro, 34% of the parents believed their child would make it when only 2% actually did.
It's sort of like playing the lottery, I guess. But, Mandy, let me tell you this story. My nephew, Easton, is one of those kids. You know, my brother Scott and his family, they have gone to these camps. They've had great teams. They travel around playing in tournaments all the time. And, you know, I have to admit, from time to time, I would look at them and say, what are you doing with this? Well, it looks like he's going to be a Big Ten collegiate athlete. It's going to pay off for him. He's going to play baseball. So, you know, there are those stories out there, great stories, and they're tempting for all the other parents and kids when they hear them.
That's outstanding.
I know, isn't it?
Congratulations.
It's great. I know.
Congratulations to your nephew. I think the big, you know, the big rub is if you're in a position where investing in sport forces a sacrifice to your family's financial future, then a balance must be struck. You know, and when you get into the things like the gear and the equipment and investing in $300 Air Jordans, you really have to question whether or not your child's ability to jump, you know, is actually exacerbated by that 300 pair, or if their height that they're actually going to obtain can actually be achieved with that $100 pair.
I want to move on to the mind stuff, but let me just tell you, my son was in a travel basketball league back when we were convinced, and he was maybe in fifth grade or fourth grade or maybe third grade, I don't know, and a couple of his teammates had these special shooting sleeves for their arm. Yeah, they're 9-year-olds, and we're spending that kind of money on that. Tell me about this mind focus when it comes to athletics and marketing and businesses. You know, people focusing not so much on the muscle as they are now on your mental approach, and there's money to be made there.
Steve, you know what? This one really excites me, I have to say. So I'm calling this notion, our brains, the new biceps. Because, you know, as spectators of sport, what gets fans into the stadium is really the physical prowess of athletes. But when physical equivalency is seen on the field or on the court, it is the mental game that's revealing itself as the difference between finishing at the front of the pack or not finishing at all. And tech startups and retail conglomerates are monetizing this and making mental training accessible for any of us who want to optimize our own performance. And I think it's fascinating.
Well, that's the thing. Neither one of us is ever going to dunk a basketball. If I may speak for you, Mandy.
No, I cannot. No.
But
with your help, Steve, I can.
I don't know. I'm 6'5". I can't do it anymore. But we can develop our mind. We can, on a par with professional athletes, work that muscle, if you will, the brain.
We absolutely can. And a world-famous neuroscientist, David Eagleman out of Baylor, said, while your brain isn't exactly a muscle, it can be trained like one. And the brain actually tells your muscles what to do and actually runs your body. So we are seeing tech startups like Lucid that's now available in the App Store, which is a newest mental training app that lends visualizations, positive affirmations, and mindful meditations that we can do in just minutes a day. And the content is taken from expert coaches who train stars like Steph Curry, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, really to optimize their performance. And, you know, we all witnessed this recently during the NBA Finals when Steph Curry, prior to every game, posts a tweet that says, lock in. Right. You know, there's a reason he actually did that to, you know, set his mind to say that I'm not worried about what happened before. I'm not even worried about the result of this game. The only thing I can control is my present moment.
I just
and that's
wish
exactly
it,
what these apps teach you.
I just wish it would have worked for him before Game 7, Mandy, but it didn't so much.
Great
to talk to you. I hope we can do it again.
Sounds great, Steve. Look forward to it.
Mandy Antonacci writes about sports and business for Inc. magazine and elsewhere.